Podcast Network Asia. Hi, everybody. I'm Edric.
I'm Joy.
Welcome to
Family Unboxed,
where we talk about everything family, from the light stuff, the fun stuff, to even the heavy and controversial stuff. Because our desire is to encourage families and see the world changed
one family at a time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Family Unboxed. And we were actually quite conflicted on what to talk about for this episode. And we figured that's a good topic to talk about. Conflict. You know, it's inevitable in families, in marriages, that this happens. We often talk about this in marriages, actually. But we realized, hey, this is something we can cover for any member of the family, including our kids. So we're going to unpack this by using something that we have used as a guide through the years, and it's inspired by and taught by Joy's dad. It comes from a certain passage in the Bible. It's a story between Abraham and Lot, a certain section. And if you want to go ahead and refer to it, it's Genesis 13, verse 4 to 17. And I'm going to unpack it basically as we look at the story. We'll look at this, we'll follow the story, and we'll look at six important things we can learn about how to resolve conflict. All right, here we go. So I'll read the story. Genesis 13, verse 4 to 17. What's happening is Abraham was very rich in livestock and silver and gold. He went on his journey from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, his nephew who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents. And the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Bible carries on and says, now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling then in the land. Remember that, okay? So weird that it's inserted, but it's important. And then verse 8 goes, so Abraham said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. Abraham says, if not to the left, then I will go to the right, or if to the right, then I will go to the left. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other, the Bible tells us. Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. So verse 14, which is the last part of our story here, is the Lord said to Abraham after Lot had separated from him, now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and your descendants forever. So, what are we seeing in this story that we can learn from? What are the six things we can learn? The first thing, when we look at conflict and resolving it and trying to find a way to settle it, is found in the opening passage. When you look at Abraham and he talks about, in verse 4, it says, he went to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly, and there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. So when we look at conflict, a large part of what helps conflict is the way in which we enter it. And if you look at this particular story, the way that Abraham entered the conflict was with prayer, spending time with God. You know, it's so important that in our family dynamic, especially when the pandemic has forced us to really literally rub each other, maybe the wrong way because of all the contact, it's important that we ask ourselves, or we condition ourselves to constantly be with God, or to be in that presence of His where we're spending time reading our Bibles, you know, or spending time in prayer, so that as the conflict arises, we're in the best or in the better posture to respond. So that's important. We see that with Abraham in his posture. He's actually coming to God and he's praying. And then, if we're now able to remember this first principle, prayer, we want to apply that as we encounter conflict. The second is now here. You look at what happens next. Now Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. There was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. So their livestock and the herdsmen, right? They're having problems. So the Canaanite, the Perizzite. So here's what happens. Verse 8, Abraham says to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen. So what can we learn here? When we see this next set, so you have an uncle and his nephew, they're traveling together, and as the conflict arises, Abraham is already in the posture of prayer. He's talking with God, and now the conflict arises because of their herdsmen, and their flocks are just growing, as you can see in the story. So we notice something very interesting. In the culture of the Jews back when this is written, like many Asian cultures, the older ones are generally to be respected. There is this hierarchy, if you will, right? So Lot being the nephew of Abraham, you'd think that when the conflict arose, Lot is supposed to be the one that goes and says, hey, you know, uncle, I'm so sorry about this. I'll settle this because I want to show you respect. That should have been the natural posture or the natural situation, but that's not what happened. Instead, we see the uncle, Abraham, approaching Lot. And as he approaches Lot, he now says, again in verse 8, right, let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. So he's actually going out of his way to now proactively try and resolve the conflict. And this is very important when you look at conflict resolution. It's important that we're proactive. So Joy, did you want to share a little bit about proactive and how important that is in resolving conflicts?
Right, because I think anyone can initiate being proactive, right? Like there's some days when, for example, in our own marriage, when I may be at fault and maybe I'm being hard-headed about it, but you could be the one to wait on me to say sorry first. But because it's important to have conflict resolution and to resolve conflicts as soon as possible, then you actually initiate saying, you know, let's sit down, let's talk about this. So I think it's all about making sure that the conflicts don't drag on and that we resolve them as soon as possible. So whoever feels that conviction to sit down and address the conflict should initiate it. Because that's also, we're all trying to do our part here, right? To make sure we have a good, harmonious family. And I admit that sometimes my heart's not in the right place. But since you feel that conviction, then you initiate it. And there's times when I know that we need to talk about something, and then I initiate it. Because that's what being proactive is about, that all of us would do our best to find ways to sit each other down when there's an issue and not let it drag on, you know, through the days, through the weeks, and escalate into something that is, you know, deeper or more wounding, or let it become bitterness.
So yeah, honey, so I think it's so important, and thanks for the reminder, right, that when we look at proactive, whether it's the kids and we feel like they did something wrong, or them towards their siblings and they feel like they did something wrong, the principle here that we're learning is proactive is taking action so that there is resolution in the conflict. Otherwise, it carries on, it can escalate, right? Which can happen in many relationships, and we've been down this path before.
Right, and when we talk about being proactive, you know, it's about setting the stage also to have conversations where you can resolve things. Like we've talked about this, right? When we're correcting our kids, for example, it's very hard to do that correcting or to deal with issues at the dinner table when we're all gathered as a family, because it's awkward for the one that's being addressed, and the conflict happens at the dinner table. It's not appropriate, right? For us to have conflict, for example, in front of them, or for us to single out one of them and embarrass them or make them feel
guilty.
Right. And we've talked about this, how it shouldn't happen that way, because it's actually, it's embarrassing, and it's not conducive to have a conversation, because then people can be defensive to try to save face. So the best way to do it is really to find a space. Like Edric and I, when we're resolving conflict, we actually lock ourselves in our room so that our kids don't have to hear our conversation. And then we can make sure that we're calmed down as we talk to one another in a healthy way. And we do the same with our kids. Like there's times when Edric might have an issue with one of our sons, and what he'll do is he'll call them into his room and they'll talk about it. And that's also being proactive. It's making sure that even the environment where the conflict resolution happens in is conducive to a healthy conversation.
Right. And you know, what's beautiful about this is the initiative is what helps alleviate any unnecessary stress. For example, very recently, you know, I was in a meeting with my father-in-law, actually. And in this meeting with my father-in-law, he said some things where I actually felt a little offended because I'm like, whoa, I felt like I was doing something which we had agreed on, and suddenly it felt like it was the wrong thing to pursue. So I didn't bring it up in the context, but because I felt bad about it, you know, and it created some tension even in me, my old self would just kind of sweep it under the rug and let things go. But I felt like, you know, I need to be able to make sure my relationship with my father is strong. So I'm going to take initiative to bring it up and say, you know what, Dad, I actually felt hurt by this and cite the circumstance. So I did that, you know, at a family dinner recently. I said, hey, Dad, you know, we want to keep open channels. So I mentioned it to him. And as I did, he graciously received it. He said, you know, I'm sorry, son. I didn't see that. Will you forgive me? And boom, it was good. So this idea of being proactive is so, so important.
Well, I just said that we should do it in private. But in this case, right, this example that you're talking about, it's because during these family gatherings as adults, we actually have conversations like, you know, hey guys, how can I improve? How is our relationship?
Yes,
that's why it was conducive.
Yes, we kind of set the ground rules through the holidays, right? That, hey, we want to have open communication channels in this family setup so that people can openly express whether they felt hurt or anything that people can improve on, which is why, to your point, honey, you're right. I did that not in private, but with the family
but
at that gathering.
Usually with our kids, it's in private.
Yes.
Right? Especially our sons, because we're really careful about making sure that we don't embarrass them in front of their siblings and they can express what's really on their heart without feeling so self-conscious.
Excellent. Great. So we'll move on. The third thing is something very, very important in conflict, and I think makes the conflict escalate beyond its proportion in many different circumstances that, you know, even Joy and I have been able to deal with. This is now found in the same statement I read earlier where Abraham, as the uncle, says to his nephew Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. The important thing to call out in that statement is not only the fact that he was proactive, but he focused on the issue. That is principle number three and one of the most important of these steps. Many times in our sincerity or maybe in the emotion, in the heat of the moment, we stray from the main thing or the main issue, or we're not able to identify it. And that's what creates more problems. So in this case, as was modeled in the Bible by Abraham towards his nephew Lot, the issue was not, hey, I'm your uncle, so you better be respecting me, which he could have said, right? Or they could have said something like, you know, this we just have too much stuff. You know, that's an issue also. There's a lot of stuff. But the real issue was because they had a lot of these possessions, their herdsmen were fighting each other. So what Abraham has wisely modeled to us is in conflict, we must identify and focus on the issue. So that's what he did. Do you want to give examples of this, darling?
I just wanted to point out that he didn't make it a personal thing, right? He wasn't, because you know how that actually makes conflict escalate when we take things so personally. But here he was saying, you know, let's not allow this to happen between our herdsmen, you know, between our, I guess in today's context, that would be
our staff.
Yeah. Right. So, because he could have said something like, why are your people treating my people this way? Don't you have any respect? And that would have made it seem like, you know, it's what's the Tagalog term for that? Personalan.
It's personal.
Yeah. He didn't make it like that. As you said, he was
focusing on the issue.
He was focusing on the issue. Right. You've done that with me many times because when we have conflict, you know, as a woman, sometimes I can pull in other issues, right? Like, remember the time like years ago when you did this and that? And at that moment, although it may be something that's important to me, it's actually not relevant to the existing conflict. So you'll say, just let me know what the issue is. Like, what is the main issue here? And let's discuss that.
I think it's important to call this out also because what can happen, and this has happened if we're to be honest, right, is in the heat of the moment, one person will say, just to protect our reputations here, well, it's all related. It's all connected. So we need to be very careful that that doesn't come up. And it can happen with our kids. This is why we're talking about it here. When we want to address issues with our kids, we need to be able to identify the main issue and not just get worked up because we're emotional or we are taking it personally, which can happen because as parents, we think, look, you're the kids. Don't disrespect us. So this is so important that we focus on this. Some practical things to help us also focus on the issue that we've learned along these lines is, do not use words like always and never towards the kids or allow them or make sure they don't do that towards each other or even to you. You always get angry at me or you're always late or you never let me play or you never allow me these things. The reason why we say don't use these words is because they will not allow you to focus on the issue and oftentimes they will complicate matters because the truth is we are almost always never correct when we use those statements. So that's why. That's one practical side tip when you focus on the issue. We also suggest that when you focus on the issue, use I feel statements. Right? So that it does not sound like you're judging the other person or coloring things beyond what is probably not true or beyond what is actually true.
Like for example.
Go ahead.
For example, when let's say you use a tone with me that I don't like because for
or
me.
Or I use it on the kids.
Yeah, or use it on the kids. Instead of saying something like, babe, I don't know why you always have to do that. Why do you talk to the kids like that? It's so mean. You're being mean. You're such a mean dad.
Which sounds like what you would say, actually, now that you brought it up. But so no, correct yourself. Yeah, and yeah, do it. So yeah. What is the correct version instead?
But the correct version would be, you know, hon, I really feel badly when you talk to the kids like that because I'm concerned. And I think this is a real statement that I've actually made to you, right? Like, I feel concerned.
Yes,
that
that's what you say.
I feel concerned that, you know, they're going to be wounded by the way you say things to them. And that's what really makes me feel badly. That's good. Better, right?
That's much better. Even the way you're saying it now, I feel
the
good.
The tone.
Being able to talk to you
I
about it.
Because you also have to use the right tone.
Right.
So, although that's not in the Bible passage here, but the tone is important. Right? Because we can be very defensive and aggressive when we're resolving conflicts.
You're learning yourself correct, and this is great. Right. So what is the point we're looking at? What is the principle? This is the third thing that's important in conflict, focusing on the issue. So as we said, you know, you don't really want to use always and never statements. You want to use I feel statements, which is really how you feel. So express how you feel. Do not use I feel and manipulate that to say things like, I feel you're a horrible person. That is not how you feel, right? That is still a judgment statement. So you want to say how you feel. Like Joy said, I feel concerned. I feel badly. That's great. That becomes a great posture, a great manner in which you can now talk about it and better proceed with resolving the conflict.
See, the problem with judging somebody, whether it's our children or our spouse or resolving conflicts, it immediately shuts them off from wanting to have the conversation.
Right.
Right? Because when you feel judged, for example, when I say mean things to you, like, I know I said something recently in one of our discussions that wasn't nice. Anyway, let's just give an example. For example, when I say something like, you're such an irritable person. Although I haven't said that to you recently, but if I were to say that, then automatically you would not want to have the conversation.
For sure. Exactly.
Because you would be like, okay, fine. Well, if that's how you feel about me already, then what's the point of having this conversation? You've already judged me. So I think that's how our children feel also. When we make statements that make them feel judged, it's very hard to then sit them down and make them want to have a conversation with us because that already really hurts their feelings.
Hold on, honey. Before we continue on with the show, I'm sure some of our listeners are wondering how we collab with brands here in Family Unboxed. And with that, our lovely listeners, we use Podmetrics.
Yes. So if you have a podcast, sign up now at podmetrics.co and use the code UNBOXD. One word, all caps. And that's one way you can help support the show as well.
Oh, and if ever you're an advertiser who wants to collab with Family Unboxed, head on over to advertiser.podmetrics.co and fill up the form. Again, that's Podmetrics,
the easiest way to monetize your podcast.
From that point, let's move to the fourth, what we see here. Now, I told you to pay attention to a particular section in this in these verses, which is really odd. Verse 7 says, "Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling then in the land." This is right in between the portion where it talks about there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. And then Abraham, verse 8, now talking to them and saying, let there be no strife, or talking to Lot about this, right? Being proactive and focusing on the issue. So the question is, why would this verse be inserted? The Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling then in the land. Well, the insight we can glean from this, again, taking from what we learned from Joy's dad years ago, is the reason the Bible calls this out is because the reality is the Canaanite and the Perizzite were people who do not know God. And they were neighbors, people around them. So you have two people whose wealth is expanding through their different livestock. So it is obviously very visible to the neighbors in the area who are living in the general land and the general area also. So that it's trying to remind us that even if the conflict is just between Abraham and Lot because of their herdsmen, the people are watching. And as these people are watching, they don't know God. So you can imagine that whatever they do, however they respond, will reflect on this God that they claim to also be following and obeying. So in conflict resolution, principle number 4 is we need to realize that we are not alone. Even if we think about it, there are people watching us. So whether it's us to our spouse and our kids are watching, then that's pretty obvious. Or us to our kids and they're also watching. Or even the house help, or maybe literally the neighbors around us, wherever it might be that, you know, there might be some conflict. We need to remember that people are watching, and we don't worry about what people will say or the impression, because that's a very superficial thought. Instead, we focus on, okay, God's reputation is on the line here. If we say that we follow God, we love God, and that's what we stand for, and we're now having conflict, how we handle conflict will also show how, you know, how strong or how deep or how real our relationship with God is. We need to make sure that we prioritize that even as we deal with each other, which is why this is a very important point that we're gleaning from the story so far.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's not about who's right. And that's a really important point. We, you know, a lot of times when we have conflict, whether it's in the family or with others, there's that tendency to want to prove that we are right and the other person is wrong. And that usually ends up becoming even a more complicated fight, because when you're both trying to prove that you're right
and the other's wrong,
and nobody wants to give in, there's no humility involved, then everyone actually loses.
Yes.
So when the priority is to make sure that God's name is honored, when we find the most God-honoring solution to the problem or to the issue and make sure that God's name is glorified, then that allows you to have a goal where both of you have the right motivation, right? It's no longer selfish motivation just for my sake, because I want to know that I won the conflict. But how can we arrive at a resolution that really glorifies God?
Well said, honey.
Right? Then mm-hmm. Everybody wins.
Right. It's actually a principle that we learned from Craig Rochelle. We've talked about him in our past podcast. I mean, we obviously love a lot of what he's talking about. He talks about fighting fair, and that's what it means. When you fight fair, it's not about fighting for who wins, but instead fighting so that fighting, quote unquote, right? Trying to resolve the conflict, not so much in a way that you see who is right and who is wrong, but instead, how do we resolve this? Let's focus on the resolution to this particular issue that we've identified, instead of deciding and spending energy on who's right and why, et cetera, et cetera. And as we do, as Joy pointed out, we're glorifying God, because that's ultimately where the resolution should be headed. Okay? So as we look at that, we're going to move on. We're now in number 5. It's a great segue from what we just talked about, because as we focus on the resolution and not so much who is right. As we focus on God's reputation, what would give him glory, what's going to happen here is the challenging part. And this is very counterintuitive, because it doesn't sound logical, but it's powerful. And this has everything to do with surrendering our rights. Where do we see that? Look at Abraham's example, right? So Abraham is proactively going to his nephew. They're thinking about the reputation. And in verse 8, as he identifies the issue and is proactive, we now see verse 9 that says this. Abraham saying, "Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to the left, then I go to the right. Or if to the right, then I'll go to the left." So what is Abraham doing? He's basically giving Lot first pick. Again, something that is not common because of the culture back at that time. It's supposed to be the younger one giving in, not the uncle. And as he does this, verse 10, Lot lifted up his eyes, saw all the valley of the Jordan that was well watered everywhere. And what happens here? He basically chose that for himself. Verse 11, he chose it for himself, all the valley, and he journeyed in that direction. Thus, they separated from each other. So we're learning from this example here that there is something powerful about surrendering our rights. And it is counterintuitive. You know, often we will want our rights to be preserved because we feel like it's the right thing, which sounds logical. But in this case, it's important because once we do this, then we make ourselves ready to create resolution that we've talked about here. One that is focused on the issue, one that prioritizes God's reputation, and really will alleviate a lot more stress. And you'll see why as we move to number 6. So you want to add something, honey, before I go to number 6?
The reason why it's counterintuitive is because everybody wants to protect their rights. I mean, that it's all about, even in this day and age, right? It's all about what's due me, my rights. So the fact that the Bible gives this example of Abraham humbling himself to say, "Lot, you choose whatever you want. That's what we'll go with." That was just crazy, because even back then, land was so important, especially for them, because of their herdsmen and needing good land for their flocks. So he was absolutely putting himself in a disadvantaged position. And nobody in their right mind, even in this day and age, would want to do that.
Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Doesn't seem right. Doesn't even seem like the godly thing to do, right? Like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. But as we see in the story, it's so amazing what happens next.
Right. So in dealing with our spouse, in dealing with our kids, surrendering our rights becomes powerful. But in this context, we don't surrender the rights for the sake of it. Otherwise, then that just becomes a martyr complex, which is not healthy, right? So you surrender your rights because of this purpose. Check it out. We're looking at verse 10. We see verse 11 that Lot chooses the valley of the Jordan. We now move on and look at how this whole thing wonderfully closes. The sixth and final principle we want to share is the reason why we want to surrender our rights, and the context is because we must, number 6, believe in God's character. Every single time that we go through conflict, we need to bear that in mind. So we're praying, coming into the right attitude. We're being proactive. We're focusing on the issue, number 3. We're prioritizing God's reputation, looking at the resolution, right? That's our focus. We're now surrendering our rights because we believe in God's character. There might be times where you don't have to necessarily surrender your rights. It might be a simpler thing, but there will be times in resolving conflict that might be the key to being able to actually finally break through and really create healing in your family dynamic and relationships. And believing in God's character is what will allow you to do that, because we know many things about God, such as God is a good God. God only wants what is good for us. So in this case, Abraham, having journeyed with him, knew this about his character. We see what happens. He says, okay, I'm going to surrender my rights. I'll let my nephew choose, because I can trust in God's character. And look at how God comes through for Abraham, which is a part that I really love. Here's the verse. The Lord said to Abraham, verse 14, after Lot had separated from him, "Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward." And the final verse in this story, "For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and your descendants forever." Isn't it amazing how you would think, right? If I was in Abraham's shoes after surrendering my rights and saying, all right, buddy, you choose. In my being, I'm probably resisting doing that, but because I'm just wanting to obey God, I'm doing it. And I'm seeing him look at the valley and how it's well watered. I'm thinking, what am I getting myself into? This is really not right. There's a temptation for me to just say, wait, wait, wait. You know what? Actually, I'm going to pull rank and say, no, I'm going to get that because it looks like a better deal. But because he trusted God, even with what he saw did not make sense, and he stuck to it, that's so important. You know, oftentimes in conflict resolution, we need to stick to the resolution, stick to the right thing that we know we need to do, even if we don't feel it. He did that. And as he did that, they moved on and Lot proceeded that direction. And then God brings Abraham to a place where he now says, okay, now you look around you. I've got your back, Abraham. Thank you for trusting me. Thank you for trusting my character. I will come through for you because that's who I am in your life. And that's what makes it so powerful. In the conflict that we have or might have or may have had in the past in our families, we encourage you to embrace this sixth and final principle in believing in God's character. And if you've never actually gotten to know this character, maybe that's the starting point for you. In any part of what we've talked about in this podcast or even in this resolving conflict, you need to be able to get to know God, start a relationship with him so that as you get to know him, you'll be able to bank on his character as we're talking about right now. Honey, want to add anything?
I think that's probably the bit where people have a hard time surrendering their rights because they feel like they're the only ones who are going to be able to look out for themselves, you know. But the reality is that God wants to bless us and God will take care of us. And if we know that about him, if we have experienced his faithfulness and we see it in his word and we cling to his promises, then we realize, you know, it's not our successes or our blessings are not really dependent on others. Ultimately, they come from the Lord. So it's okay if we don't always get the better deal in an argument or in the conflict, if it doesn't seem like we come out the winner, because there'll be times, right? I mean, we talked about how both parties must think about what will honor God the most, but there are times when the other person involved does not have that as a priority and they just want to win. And it's hard for maybe you or me or whoever it may be, maybe you guys, to humble yourselves and say, okay, you know what? I'm not going to force you to agree with what I see. If that's really your opinion, I will not fight you about it. And it's hard to do that. But this is where we have to realize the Bible tells us, you know, when we humble ourselves, God exalts the humble, but he's against the prideful. And so in marriage, for example, I've been so blessed by Edric because I know there have been many times when I'm really the one who's wrong and my spirit's not right. And I don't want to say sorry and I'm struggling with that. And Edric will say, he'll be the one to really humble himself and say, okay, babe, well, these are the areas where I think I can improve. And he really thinks through and really humbles himself to do that. And that actually really softens my heart and makes me also want to change and say where I can improve. But I know that as a husband, he could assert his authority and say, hun, you're wrong. You need to change. You know, what you did was not okay. And I can't believe that you did that. But instead of doing that, he allows God to work in my heart and he entrusts his own emotions and what he wants to happen in the situation to the Lord. And God works it out for both of us in the end, because as the Bible said, you know, he exalts the humble, but he's opposed to the prideful. So I think this is what we see in Abraham's life here too, that he was entrusting his future, his well-being to the Lord, not to Lot, not even to himself. And so that's why he allowed Lot to make the decision, even if it could have been detrimental to himself. And this is hard because there are times even in our family when, you know, I'm upset with my children because maybe they do something that is disrespectful
or inconsiderate. And I want to call it out and I want to make them feel badly because I'm upset and I'm hurt. But, you know, I humble myself and I don't make a big deal out of it. And I just pray for them. And then when there's opportunity to talk to them about it, I'll bring it up and say it to them in a kind way. And then they realize it and then they apologize. But if I was to not surrender my right, I mean, if I was to hold on to my rights and assert myself as a parent and say things that are mean or lord it over them or put them in their place because they're younger and they're subordinate, supposed to be subordinate to me, it would really not end up well. And it goes back to what we said earlier. It would not glorify God and it would actually push our kids away from God. You know, if I were to get angry, to lose my temper, even though maybe most of us as parents feel like, you know, it's our right to get angry when our children mess up and when they do things that are disrespectful. But that is not actually the humble way of resolving conflict. And in the end, it actually doesn't work. It may work superficially to, you know, maybe to control our kids, to force them into submission. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really deal with the heart issues in a way that's really effective.
So thanks, honey. Those were great insights. You know, and as we wrap up with everybody here, conflict is inevitable in families. And maybe right now you're actually going through something right now with your spouse, with your kids. And so we found this to be a very helpful framework for you, looking at these six things, you know, coming into the conflict with the right attitude. So we encourage prayer and then being proactive, focusing on the issue, make sure even the words you use, don't use words like never, always, use I feel statements, and realize that you're not alone in this. There are people watching. So you want to make sure you focus on resolving it. What is the resolution? Not so much who's right. And of course, looking at God's reputation. And finally, the last two would be surrendering your rights because, and this is the last one, you trust in God who will help you through it if the surrendering your rights is necessary. So we hope this has been helpful for you guys and we look forward to joining you in our next podcast. This is Edric and
this is Joy
again for another episode of Family Unboxed. Bye everybody.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.